whatever the expectations are, we'll seek the Lord to do our best. And as I've told others, you do what you do, the rest of it is the Lord's department. Yes. I'll leave it at that. But I don't know just where you are today. I don't pretend to know, don't want to know. That leaves me free to say what I say. I've had an occasion or two where someone asked me, did somebody call on you? Like, no, I don't do that. So I don't like to be in a spot where you feel like you're preaching at people.
Yeah.
Amen. So may the Lord bless. And I, a lot of times, as an old machinist said, he told me, you have a lot of questions. So I'm going to have some while I'm here. And I'm going to start with one. What is this meeting really about? Or any meeting? What is it about?
Souls.
Souls.
Encouragement.
Encouragement.
Revival.
What was that?
Revival.
Revival.
Revival? Yes.
Inspiration.
Inspiration. Is that all?
Growth
and maturity.
Fellowship. Wanted to know what God has to say to us.
All right.
Out here.
All right. What does he have to say to any of us, wherever we are? It boils down to the point that it's what I call heart work.
Amen.
It's a work in the heart. If it doesn't do anything in the heart, we've wasted our time. And so that's what we will. Look for, and I'm going to start with that because I tell the home folks, people watch you. May not say nothing to you, but they watch you. And I've had occasions where I found out they were watching pretty close. When I got ready to retire, I told the foreman of our crew one day, I said, well, I'm out. He said, what? I said, I'm out. He said, you leaving? I said, yes, I am. You retired? Yes. I don't know if he was ready to hear that or not, but he finally asked me, well, when are you going? Now, this was in end of March, first part of April. I said, July 1st. Yeah. And he made a comment. He said it in front of all of the co-workers. Things get pretty hectic around here, and sometimes they did. Sometimes you had emergencies arise where it's all hands on deck, and there's no time to try to figure out who's at fault. There were certain things that you had to get done immediately. And he said, when it gets like that, he says, you always calm. I've never seen you get mad. Now that scared me because I thought, you're watching a lot closer than you might would think. I had an occasion in Wichita when I was living there. I was forced to be a supervisor. I didn't want the job. I didn't need the job. I had others tell me you should put in for it, and I told them I don't want it. But the head man of our whole department called me in on a Friday afternoon about 30 minutes before I was supposed to get off work. The operations supervisor called me and said, where are you? And I said, I'm in the control room talking to the plant operator trying to get some things set up for Monday. He said, you need to go downtown and talk to Jim. And I was like, what do I need to go talk to him for? He said, he'll tell you when you get there. Well, when I got there, he told me, he said, on Monday morning, you're going to be the mechanical supervisor to Gordon Evans' plant. I already have all of the signatures except for the vice president of the company. And I'm sending the paperwork by courier up to Topeka, Kansas. He's coming into work on Saturday. So he's going to sign it on Saturday, and you have to be over there on Monday. And you've got to hit the ground running because they're already halfway through their shutdown. And I thought, well, I'd like to eat. I got mouths to feed at home, so I guess I'm going. And off I went. And he told me again, he said, you know, I worked with you when I was a supervisor. I've never seen you get mad. And I told him straight up and said, well, it's not because some things didn't upset my apple cart. I said, but I was taught you don't just claw off the handle. And I've had another occasion where a machinist asked me one day when I was going to check on the job, he said, how are you always so serene? I had to laugh on that, and I said, man, that's not me, that's God. I said, our old pastor told us a part of sanctification was that you don't fly off the handle, you don't get all upset, start cursing everybody out, and all those kinds of things. And I said, that's just the Lord. So a lot of people are watching you all. They may never get saved, but they're watching. And so you need to stop and consider that as you deal in this life, you got certain things in your own heart. Those that do the work that they ought to, well, it's all good. But I've found that sometimes people, even though they say they're saved, don't do the things they need to do when it comes to hard work. And the way I found this out is that sometimes you get called in when they're about to leave this world. Now they're trying to straighten up some things. And I have told the home folks this, and I'll share it with you. If you are fortunate enough to see someone who's about to pass off of this seat, and you see how they are checking themselves and asking the Lord to check them. Some are trying to clear some things up. If it's important enough to do it right before you die, it's important enough for you to do it right now.
Yes,
right. Whether it's hurts, grudges, you name it. So may the Lord help us as we go along. But then there's one other thing that I've noticed. And you have to realize that whatever you have in your heart, that's what you're going to meet God with.
Yes.
So do you really want to meet him with that? I've seen people that were so sure of themselves. And I've heard some say, well, I don't think that if the Lord came today, I wouldn't have a problem with him seeing me do this or that or the other. And I thought to myself, I don't know if I'd be that comfortable saying that. You see, part of the problem we have is that we have never physically seen the presence of the Lord. And we don't realize how, can I say, terrifying that could be? How awe-inspiring that could be? And it's easy to say something until things begin to happen. And you and I need to be careful about being so sure that we are so right. I find that, and you probably have seen some of it, when election time comes, even some of the saints get involved in what they have to say when it comes to politics. And I found that in some cases, I'm talking saints. Now, I'm saying this because I know sometimes people don't like for me to say it this way, but I ain't talking about way out there. I'm talking about right here amongst us. Some get so sure of themselves and feel like they're so right. And yet, they're not. And we need the Lord to check us and help us to see that as we go along in this life. So, you look upon it, and I think about the songwriter, and sometimes I ask them at home, do we really understand what these songs are saying? I've give you an example. You sing that song, I've enlisted in the service till I die. You know what it means to be a soldier? Now, I know some of the brothers do, because maybe they've been in the military. And I was talking with someone, and said, I haven't been there. My dad was in World War II. My youngest brother was in Special Forces. 82nd Airborne, and I have a brother-in-law that drove a tank in the Army, and he has told us that my baby brother came home from some things he wasn't supposed to come home from. There's a lot about the military that you don't stop to think about, and that's not my thought tonight, but I'm just saying that there are a lot of things that we need to think more deeply. And I find at home sometimes, Brother Eric Clay likes to say, well, Brother Williams used to tell us there's a message in every song. And that's true. He used to tell us that. But they missed one part. He also used to tell us, let us get the message.
Yeah.
And if you get the message, you're going to have to think a little more deeply than just singing a nice melody.
Yeah.
But may the Lord help us along those lines. Luke the 18th chapter, starting in verse 10 down through verse 14, you consider, do you really want to meet God with what you have on hand? Now, when I say that, I'm not just challenging what you feel you have in your heart, but I want to express it like this, and I may say it again. There's been occasions where I've been through some training and reached the status of what they call a journeyman electrical mechanic. Well, that don't really mean a whole lot in one sense, but here's the point I want to get to. We have sometimes, or have had, trainees. Now, there are other qualifications or other occupations where they have journeyman electricians, journeyman linemen, in different things, journeyman mechanics, and the trainees will go through what they call an apprenticeship. Well, because of the way our program is set up, they call them trainees. And sometimes when they would come through the plan where I worked, there are certain things that you want them to get experience on. And so sometimes you might have three or four of them with us. All right, today you're the journeyman. You're going to tell me how we're going to do this job. And you're going to lead the way. So what do you want to do first? And they might speak up and say, well, we ought to do this, or we ought to do that, we ought to do the other. And sometimes everything they're telling you is just right down the line. And then I'll ask a question. Are you sure about that? Well, you can tell real quick if they're sure, because if they're not, they begin to change what they were saying. And finally, you might speak and say, well, are you sure about that? Now they really don't know what to do. But the point is, when we tell them, we want you to get trained, we want you to learn, but we also want you to be sure about what you're doing. But you can't be so sure that no one can double check you. You can't be so sure that you can't listen to somebody else's suggestion and then weigh out whether that's a better way to go or not. I've found that some people on the job don't want to be double checked, but in the industry that I worked in, that's a good way to get yourself killed if you're not. And I find, and I've had someone ask me once, that you use examples of electricity. And I said, that's because I found that electricity is so much like salvation in the way that it works and in the things that are required. So you consider what we have in our heart right now today. Really ready to meet God with that? Because everybody knows what they got in there that they haven't let others see. And yet, I have found that some, when it came to the end, now they're trying to clear some things up. And you know, when you deal with somebody like that, that's not easy to do. And I've seen some, and in the case, I was telling my wife, it included the ministry, started confessing some things, and his pastor was just dumbfounded. Like, how did he get by like that? But you know, the Lord knows who he's dealing with.
Yes.
You and I can't focus. And as we go along the way, you have to think about some things honestly and deeply. Luke 18 and 10.
two men went up into the temple to pray.
Right. And you've heard this before.
The one a Pharisee.
One was a Pharisee.
And
the other a publican.
The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself.
Yes.
God, I thank thee that I am not as other men are.
Now listen to me.
Extortioners.
Yes.
Unjust. Adulterers. Or even as this publican. I fast twice in a week. I give tithes of all that I possess. And the publican standing afar off would not lift up so much as his eyes unto heaven, but smote upon his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone that exalteth himself shall be abased, and he that humbleth himself shall be exalted.
All right, now I'm going to ask another question. What do you see in this Pharisee?
Pride?
Self-righteousness? Anything else?
Disdain.
Yes. All right. And you consider. And I tell people sometimes, when you have something, if it's wrong or if it's right, you have it working within you, it's going to bring in something else. If it's right to start with, it'll bring in more good. In other words, and I tell them at home, I said, if you start growing in faith, you can't help but gain in some of the other graces as well.
Amen.
If you start participating in the wrong things, you're going to bring in some other things likewise. And a mindful old man, I was still in college at the time, and working at this one plant, and part of my job was to cut the grass. It was in the downtown area, and had several acres to cut with, and it's summertime, and I got all long sleeves, and got my hard hat on, and he would tell me, oh, you don't have to be that strict. You don't have to. You can loosen up some. I said, there's a problem with that. He said, what is that? I says, you can't open that door and close it fast enough to let only one thing in. You crack it open, some other things will come in with that one. And so when you consider this Pharisee, here's some other things that you can think about later and see if you see that or if you agree with it or not. But when I look at him, I see that he really doesn't have much empathy. Now, on the outside, it looked like he was doing okay. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing that. Adultery, this, that, and the other. So it's almost like he can say, I'm not doing harm to any man. You could say he was observing the ordinances of his religion and seemed to have been pretty devout. And much like the young ruler, you could say everything is in order. But when you look at his actions here, you see the disdain, I call it judgmentalism. I'm not like that man right there. You can also see that he didn't have much empathy. Because if he really did, he could recognize his condition. He could recognize the publican's condition and realize, I need to pray for him. Because if it wasn't for the Lord's mercies, I'd be just like him. He had the pride on him, and that brings in coldness for a lot of people, hard-heartedness for a lot of people. It brings in what I heard Sister Mary Hargrave say, spiritual bigotry. And you find that people have attitudes as a result of that. So why do we have this example in the Bible? Help me out. If I was out on the street, didn't know nothing about it, and I asked you, why do we have this example?
To learn from it.
To take heed to the warning so that we won't be as this Pharisee was. And sometimes I have seen some where, sad to say, we just about call them brother or sister Pharisee. May the Lord help us. And again, people are watching you. I had a co-worker who would make comments, kind of chauvinistic at times. And he made a comment more than once. He said, women ought to be at home baking cookies and having children. some of the co-workers didn't like that. And one of them, he said, well, that's what I say about these so-called Christians. Holier than thou. Then he gets quiet and it's kind of like, all right, Paul, what are you going to say about that? So I had to let him know that, well, a true Christian doesn't have anything to be holier than thou about.
That's right.
And I left it alone. Another co-worker, same group, heard some of those same comments again at a later date. And he got irate about it and said, he's a hypocrite. You know why he said that? Because that man's wife was working two jobs. Children were grown. But he said, his wife ain't at home baking cookies. And again, they look at you, and I said, now, I'm just going to tell you what I told him. He says, well, the Bible does say woman is to be the keeper at home. I said, but if you read Proverbs, you find out that she's out and about, buying land, selling land, doing this, doing that. She ain't just in the house baking cookies.
Right.
And I said, you have to understand there's some balance there. And I know what he was saying. I've heard him say it several times myself. But again, it was more of a thing that, well, he's professing to be a Christian, and now I'm attacked that.
Yeah.
But may the Lord help us as we go along the way. So I see so many other things that come in with this, and we have this example in order to warn us to not find ourselves in those kinds of places.
Yeah.
And I have looked at people out on the street. I've had occasions, I was on a walk one day and a man popped up out of the bushes, just stood up all of a sudden, and he said, I haven't had anything to eat in 3 days, and would you give me some money so I could get some food to eat? And I said, you really hungry? He said, yes. I said, come on with me. I said, there's a Carl Jr.'s down at the end of where I normally walk to this certain spot, touch the light pole, then I turn around and walk my way back to my car. I said, you really hungry? I'll buy it. I said, I don't give money many times to people because I'm afraid they'll take it and go buy drugs with it. I said, but if you're hungry, I'll buy you what you want. And he came on in and we stood up at the counter and the lady asked, can I help? And I said, whatever this man wants, let's get it for him. And he was hesitant. So I said, well, you like this or you like that? Yeah, okay, give him one of those. And you need some fries to go with that? Give him a large fry. And you need something to wash it down with? So what kind of soda would you like to buy? And bought it for him. And then I told him, I said, look, this ain't going to hold you very long. So I'm going to double your order. And at least half a day from now, you'll be able to eat again. Even though it'll be cold, it might be kind of soggy, but you'll at least have something. And he thanked me and thanked me and thanked me. I said, take care of yourself. And I went back to walking and praying and finishing my walk. Well, may the Lord help us as we go through this life. We need to be careful about the kind of attitudes we project. And again, I say it over and over, people are watching. May never say a word to you, but they are watching.
Yes.
What kind of example do they see? And based on what they see, would you really want to meet God with that? May the Lord help us. Matthew, the 22nd chapter, starting with the first verse, reads down through verse 14. And again, you have heard this before, but think about the seriousness of it, because we're in a time where people are not taking God very seriously. And I would ask this question, do you feel like the fear of the Lord is lifting from the earth?
Yes.
Now I'm going to ask another question. Do you feel like the fear of the Lord is lifting from some of us?
Yes.
Now, I'm going to say it from this standpoint, and not everybody agrees, but I'm often looking out and seeing things in the world, then looking in. Many times what's happening in the world, it has an effect upon us.
Yes.
And sometimes the effect may not be as dramatic as it is out in the world, but it still has an effect upon us.
Yes.
Amen.
And just a little example, you know, the things about homosexuality and all of that. I remember as a little boy, 5th, 6th grade, 10, 11, 12 years old, we knew who was a homosexual and who wasn't.
Amen.
They didn't tell us.
You see?
We just saw it and you learned.
Right.
We didn't know that was the word for it. They had another word for it that he wasn't allowed to say. Yeah, sissy and so we knew. And even then, like, I still remember telling my mother, well, there's this man works at the drugstore and he ain't right.
Amen.
And she said, don't ever go to the bathroom by yourself.
That's right.
Well, other parents told their children the same thing, because you could go to the, it was Turner Drugstore, you could right across the street from the school at recess during the lunch hour, you could buy a bowl of chili and a soda for 15 cents.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go over there and try to eat real quick, and somebody said, man, I need to go to the bathroom. Okay, I'll go with you. See, we knew to stick together.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, that man, I never heard anybody say anything bad about him. But we was on the guard.
Amen.
But may the Lord help us. That, you know, in this time, you don't think much. Back then, we thought, ooh, he's one of them. And you know, my parents said, hush your mouth.
Yeah.
So you didn't talk too much about it. Now it's right out there where you see it in broad daylight, so to speak. And we kind of used to see it. And we just kind of go off.
Come on.
And I've even said sometimes, well, as long as they don't bother me, I ain't gonna mess with them. But you see, when you look at it, it has an effect upon us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so you consider, we don't want those kinds of things happen. And you certainly don't want to take the Lord for granted.
Yeah.
22nd chapter, verse 1.
And Jesus answered and spake unto them again by parables, and said, the kingdom of heaven
is like unto a certain king
which made a marriage for his son.
Yes.
And sent forth his servants to call them that were bidden to the wedding, and they would not come. Again, he sent forth other servants, saying, tell them which are bidden. Behold, I have prepared my dinner. My oxen and my fatlings are killed, and all things are ready. Come unto the marriage. But they made light of it, and went their ways, one to his farm, another to his merchandise.
Yes.
And the remnant took his servant, and entreated them spitefully, and slew them. But when the king heard thereof, he was wroth, and he sent forth his army, and destroyed those murderers, and burned up their city. Then said he to his servants, the wedding is ready, but they which were bidden were not worthy. Go ye therefore into the highways, and as many as ye shall find, bid to the marriage. So those servants went out into the highways, and gathered together all as many as they found, both bad and good. And the wedding was furnished with guests. And when the king came,
the king comes in
to see the guests, he saw there a man which had not on a wedding garment. And he said unto him, friend, how camest thou in hither, not having a wedding garment? And he was speechless. Then said the king to the servants, bind him hand and foot, and take him away, and cast him into outer darkness. There should be weeping and gnashing of teeth. For many are called, but few are chosen.
All right. The king came in, and he's looked. How do you think you look to him? Come on. And I don't want us to get too comfortable.
Amen.
And I'm going to say this. I can remember in our safety meetings, the safety director would warn us over and over and over, do not get too comfortable working around electricity.
Right.
It will hurt you.
That's right.
It will kill you.
That's right.
And he was telling us, don't take it for granted. And I have been told of some occasions, somebody did, and the results was, I had a stroke. So may the Lord help us. I look at that, and then I think about the Lord. And as I've told the home folks, I said, you know, everybody said he wanted to go to heaven. Now, all of you have, most all of you, I'll say, have been teenagers. You ever heard your parents say, if you don't like the rules around here, you can get out and go find your own place?
Hello, somebody.
You ever been told that? It's their house, and it's what else? Their rules. We're talking about going to God's house. Eternally in the heavens, it's by His rules. We can try to massage it, justify it with each other. You can't do it with Him. And sometimes you can't do it with your parents. May the Lord help us. But this is where we are. So He was looking at this man. He didn't show any disdain. He said, friend, how come you don't have a wedding going? Now, you know, sisters, when there's a wedding, what do they like to do?
Dress up.
And I got to go get me something new to wear. I've heard it before. And I, you know, how men are, I thought, you got a whole closet full of clothes. What do you mean you got to go find something new to wear? Well, this is a wedding. They went and found something to wear. And I was paying for it, too. But when you look at it, there's something about a wedding where you want to be able to do something like that. Now, everybody can't afford that, maybe. But in this instance, and their customs back then, is that when the wedding was put on, who was hosting it provided everything. Food, the wedding garments. So you really had no excuse for not having one on. All you had to do is say, I need a garment. And they would fix you up. So when he came in and said, why do you not have on a wedding garment? He was speechless because there was nothing he could say. And so you consider, God has provided. He said, I've provided all things that pertain to life and godliness. He's provided it all.
Yes.
What excuse will we have to find ourselves standing before Him without a proper garment? And so you consider that sometimes you need to stop and ponder. And I some of the things that I've seen, I've telling my wife about it one day, and I said, you know, I'm walking and praying, and I finally said, Lord, either you are way more strict than I think, or you're more easy than I think. I said, because I see all these people doing all this kind of stuff that scares me. And they say they all right with it, and the Lord is all right with it. And I'm like, I won't give you 5 cents to try to get in that way. But people are that way. And it's like, Lord, you have shown that you're going to be looking, and you're going to be looking to see something. He has His expectations.
Yes.
Just like we do. And so you consider, how are you going to meet those expectations? Right. And you can't be so sure. What I've seen is that older ones, when they know they're getting down to the end, they're still checking themselves. Lord, help me to see. I don't want to miss anything.
Amen.
And there's nothing wrong with that. The only thing I'm going to say, and you may hear me say it again, is that you and I need to ask Him to start checking us now. And when you look at something like David and others, he's like, Lord, try my reins. In other words, try me, prove me. If I fail, I want to see it so I can do something about it now.
Yeah.
And it's the same for you and me. And I'll even ask, you can answer within yourself or you can chew on it later. When's the last time you asked God to inspect you and check you and show you where you might not be quite where you think you are? And I heard a comment about someone having taken a test and didn't think they had done so well, and I had to chuckle within myself because I've been in that place. I've seen times where in engineering school, you take a test, and then as you're walking out, you hand your paper to the professor, and you get out the door, and somebody asks you, well, how do you think you did? And I've seen some say, oh, I think I did pretty good. I was able to answer the questions. And most of my tests, the professor might put four questions on there. And they would tell you, if I can do these four questions in like 10 to 15 minutes, then I figure it'll take you the whole hour. And I've seen the time